Cam?
Yeah.
Do you see the irony of us recording a podcast titled The Log Off Podcast when there were so many instances from this past weekend where people really just could have logged off and done a lot better than they did?
Yeah. Myself among them.
We failed to record a podcast last Friday. Life got in the way, but it's Monday, which means we're back on the podcast air.
Yeah.
On the podcast waves.
Just a note on my voice. I was at the NFC Championship in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I have completely lost my voice.
You are worse for wear.
Yeah. And I'm going to pull through it, you know.
You're gritty.
Just give it my all.
You're gritty.
Not like Henrik Sedin. Not like...
we'll get to Henrik Sedin in a second. Mm-hmm. But I guess a good place to start is... with everything that actually almost
Saturday,
our entire podcast is just going to be
about
a Saturday recap.
What happened Saturday night? And there's going to be a bunch of things we'll forget.
Right.
Martin St. Louis' 4-goal game instantly on the back burner. It wasn't even a
Joe Pavelski getting his wet first career hat trick after the fact because they credited him with the goal afterwards.
Yeah. And that wouldn't have been in the top five stories for Saturday.
Right.
So, where do we start? Vancouver, Calgary?
Let's go in order. So,
okay.
I think the first thing that happened was the festivities at Joe Louis Arena.
Okay. So for those of you that miss it, Nicholas Cronwall takes a shot with Detroit down 2-1 the game. Cronwall takes a shot.
It was like 20 seconds off the
game. Yeah, deflects off Jarrett Stoll. Stick bounces high up off the mesh. Referees miss it. Comes down and hits Jonathan Quick in the back. Mm-hmm. Goes in. And Detroit would later win in the shootout. And I thought what was the best part about that, other than how irate the Kings, you know, were at that.
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter had some pretty choice comments for the officials.
Yeah.
But during the overtime period, Gustav Nyquist had a puck bounce over his stick, and the Detroit color guy yells out, "Detroit just can't buy a break."
That's great.
Which was hilarious.
So... yeah, that happened. And I think after the game, Nicholas Cronwall told reporters, like, yeah, there's no two ways about it. That goal shouldn't have counted, but, you know, I'm not complaining.
But it's not just the goal shouldn't have counted, but how hilarious of a goal is it? Just the bank shot off the goalie and in. That's something that almost happened to Jonathan Bernier in the Toronto-Montreal game.
Right.
Where he just, like, dump in, took a wild bounce, and... when it off his back and off the crossbar.
Well, it sure seems like this sort of stuff happens a lot to Jonathan Quick, doesn't it? I mean, we remember like the stuff that happened in the playoffs with the Alex Steen goal, and he's just been. And earlier this year, I think Ryan McDonagh scored.
Yeah, from his own
crazy goal, and it kind of seems like, you know, we've both been critical of Jonathan Quick, but he's had his moments.
He's had some. Yeah, that's just a goal.
But that kind of stuff happens. I mean, we've seen here in Vancouver. Two instances for Roberto Luongo, the one where Dan Hampus scored on him, and then against San Jose when the puck just
took
the strangest series of bounces and wound up going off his back and in. It happens, you know.
Oh, yeah, it happens to goalies.
It happens to the best of goalies, and then it happens to the best of Toskala.
Yeah, sometimes. But, you know, as far as all of Vesa Toskala's faults, I don't think that goal was the worst one. That took some crazy hops on the way to the net. There was one against Buffalo, though, where he tried to reach out to catch a puck, a slow shot that was going about 15 feet wide, and he wound up deflecting it in. That was the most Vesa Toskala goal.
Yeah.
A shot from own end. That happens to everybody.
I miss Vesa Toskala. I wonder what he's doing these days.
Oh, apparently, I think last year he was one of the worst goalies in the Finnish league.
I'm going to search this up.
Okay.
I've kind of forgot it. He's gone off my radar, but now that we're talking about him, I miss the Vesa Toskala era.
Yeah, that's how we wind up talking about Vesa Toskala when we start on Detroit, LA. And that's also a big 2 points for Detroit. They're in a situation that I don't think anyone thought that they would be in. They've just been killed by injuries all year. They're out of the playoff race, or they're out of the playoff picture. They're still in the playoff race. And I think that they're going to get it back together, especially as their guys come back. But that's a big, big 2 points for them.
Da-da-da, da-da-da. That's the breaking news music, Cam.
Okay.
Vesa Toskala didn't play last year.
Oh.
But 2 years ago, he posted an .885 save percentage in the Finnish League.
I think some goalie had one of the worst in
I mean, 885 is pretty bad.
It might have been last year or the year before, but don't bother searching it up.
I don't think anyone will.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving off of Vesitoskla.
But someone.
Do you have any other thoughts on Detroit, LA? I mean, we kind of covered it.
Not really.
It was stupid, but.
And I sympathize for LA, but
yeah.
You know, you pay it forward, and these things come back. And
yeah. All right. Moving on to the other big story from Saturday.
Yeah. Okay.
Vancouver Calgary. I have some thoughts on this, Cam.
Hang on, is someone at your door? I think John Tortorella is trying to get in.
Hold him back.
Yeah.
We need Brian McGrattan to hold him back.
We need your puppy to.
Yeah.
Chase him away.
I was at the game covering it.
Oh yeah.
So, I've never really understood why. I mean, you've covered games before.
Yeah.
Why they hand out those lineup sheets and like summary sheets at intermissions, because, you know, it just provides you with stuff that you can just easily find by pulling up a box score online.
Yeah.
And every time I look around me, and every single person, including Tony Gallagher, has a laptop with them.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what the point of that is. I mean,
well, yeah.
It tells you like the giveaways.
Yeah.
The box shots.
It's the events. They give us the event summary.
Yeah,
it's like, and
I just like I'm like, oh cool, and just look away. And
I wonder what would happen if they found the face-off report. Anyway, for those of you who are sort of unfamiliar with the way it works in Vancouver's in the hallway outside, you'd have to go a distance to get from Vancouver's dressing room across to the visitors' locker room.
Yeah.
There, you'd have to walk out. You have to walk like the Canucks have a pretty big dressing room that's very. It's very close to where their bench would be.
Right.
So you have to walk out of that little facility, take a left, and it's, you know, it's about 50 feet down to where Calgary would have been.
But let me finish my preamble before we actually get into the specifics of what happened.
Just giving some for geography lessons.
So I was sitting there, you know, munching on some popcorn.
Okay.
Sipping on my really, really crappy coffee.
Okay.
Which was free, so I can't really complain. Yeah. And one of the Rogers Arena employees comes by and he hands out the lineup sheets. And on that lineup sheet, it includes all the healthy scratches or the injuries. And then it has all the players in the starting lineup circled.
Yeah.
So obviously everyone noticed right away who was on the ice to start the game.
Yeah.
It was McGrattan, Westgarth, and then it was Weiss, Sestito, and Kellen Lane for the Canucks. And everyone's like, that's kind of interesting. Like, I wonder what's going to happen here. And then we see Kevin Bieksa start getting up out of his stance, like before the faceoff, talking to Kevin Westgarth. Then he switches spots with Lane to take the faceoff, wins the faceoff.
Yeah. And if PER was a thing in hockey, a very efficient 2 seconds for Kevin Bieksa.
And then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure everyone listening to this has seen it by now. If you haven't, just YouTube it.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone just starts fighting. It's total mayhem. Now, a few quick points. Kellen Lane was making his NHL debut. Lasted 2 seconds.
Mm. Yeah, some other debuts have lasted 2 seconds.
I do feel bad for him because apparently he did fly out his entire family to come see that.
And it was they're from Oakville. They had the money.
I know, but still, that kind of sucks. And then Nick Kaprios went on a huge rant on Sportsnet last night. He's like, if John Tortorella has any common decency, he's going to pay for the flight tickets to Edmonton for his family. And he was just like losing his mind over this. And I thought it was kind of Nick Kaprios-ish, which isn't a good thing.
Nick Kaprios eats puppies.
A couple other things. Tom Sestito somehow, against all odds, was one of only two players out of the 10 on the ice to not get a game score.
The other being Brian McGrattan.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I thought that was my favorite part of the entire thing.
I think they were the two that were the most obvious. If I was thinking, you know, the referees probably could have stopped it right at the start by giving misconducts to everyone on the ice. And I would have started with Sestito and McGrattan.
Tom Sestito's my hero.
Yeah.
People that follow me on Twitter are aware of my affection for him.
You know, but Tortorella and Hartley have some bad blood going. Remember when Eric Bolton took that flying elbow right at Paul Ranger's head? That was when Tortorella was coaching Tampa Bay and when Bob Hartley was coaching Atlanta.
Right.
Atlanta.
Yep.
Bob Hartley.
Bob Hartley.
And Hartley has coached some very, very tough teams. Not tough teams, but cheap, shoddy teams. Right. He's never a stranger to brawls. I don't think he minds that. He fits so well in a Brian Burke type system.
Right.
Brian Burke's getting the team in Calgary that he didn't get in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I think he loves the fact that he gets it.
Well, I thought if you guys haven't read it, Elliot Friedman like put up an article about kind of covering all the points of the behind the scenes stuff, and I thought he made some interesting points about how Brian Burke hasn't really been like traveling with the team or anything. Like he's only appeared at a few road games, and then he was there for this one, and you know, I mean, he's made it pretty clear like what kind of team he wants, and. Friedman wasn't really like you know making any excuses for Hartley, but he did kind of hint at like
the worst one was when Hartley came out and said, oh, you know, we started them because they've been playing so well for us.
That's just
chicken shit.
I know. What was the point of that? Like, did a single person out there believe that?
Yeah, like, I don't think that John Tortorella helped by, but you know, what was he gonna do? Who's he gonna put on the ice?
And this is an interesting debate because. I feel like there aren't too many times where something comes up like this where I can honestly see the argument for both ends. Yeah. And I don't think anyone's wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know where you stand on how much John Tortorella is to blame. Now, forget the part where he tried to go into the Calgary Flames locker room and fight everyone.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about like the notion of seeing that Hartley's sending out Westgarth and McGrattan.
Yeah,
and then matching that with Sestito and Lane and that. What do you think about that? Like, what would you have done if you were in Tortorella's shoes?
I don't know. I can't. You know, I don't know the players in the situation. I think Kevin Bieksa was the right guy to have on the ice in the situation. I probably would have gone with Bieksa Garrison.
Right.
I think that you know, if anything happens, those are two veterans that can handle themselves.
Yeah,
and they're not. You know, they're important to that team, but they're not, you know, Hamhuis and Tanev are obviously the top pairing. Tanev, you don't want to see in a fight.
Well, yeah, you also don't want to see his penalty minute totals skyrocketing.
Then, yeah, and then you got Yannick Weber and Alex Edler, and I don't think that they've ever dropped the gloves at all. Actually, Edler has a bit of a nasty streak. But, you know, for the forwards, obviously you send out Sestito and Weiss, and you couldn't really... I think I wonder if maybe if that wasn't Lane's first game, if you scratch him and you get Zach Dalpe,
right?
I would have even kept Sestito off the ice. I think that Zach Dalpe would have been perfect for that situation because he's skilled enough to move around those guys,
right?
But he's also, you know, he's not banged up or.
Well,
but he wasn't in the lineup.
Yeah, back to the Friedman thing though. Like, I thought it was like a brilliant take on it. Because he kind of points out, like, you know, there's the argument where Tortorella can tell his guys, hey, like, stay away from this. Don't fight these guys. But,
yeah.
I mean.
You can't.
He's trying to establish this perception of the Canucks being, like, a tough team to play against. It's not going to take shit from anyone, which they've been known to do over the past few years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't. If a team's going to try and punk you like that on your home ice, I understand where he's coming from with that. And there's also the angle that Henrik Sedin was injured, and I'm sure he left the game in the second period and didn't come back. Yeah. I'm sure they knew there was a strong chance for him to for that to happen. So let's say you send out a Brad Richardson or something like that, and he fights. And then Henrik Sedin leaves the game.
Yeah.
Ryan Kessler is your only center.
Yeah. that's why you get Dalpe in the lineup.
I know, but so I don't know. But like how can you if Dalpe's? I'm wondering what's like, how long before a game do you have to like announce who's being like a healthy scratch and who's
right not? When you submit the lineups?
Yeah.
So I think they're due 10 minutes before the game starts.
Okay.
So so a lot of coaches won't, you know, a guy will take the warm up and and you know, it's a game time decision. Okay. That's when they it's literally a game time decision. So you know, theoretically a coach could go against what he wanted to do earlier in the day, you know.
I mean, I hope when people are listening to this podcast they're not thinking, "Oh my god, these Canucks homers, like I can't believe." Cuz I think me and you are you know, as critical of the Canucks as anyone.
When
there's reason to be.
The thing that sort of bugs, that gets in my craw about this is that the Canucks are a much better team than, you know, when they try to stay away from the fights and all this stuff. And,
right,
you know, Tom Sestito's had a weird month or so, and he's become a key player on the team. He had spent some time on the second line on the first power play unit.
Right.
And, you know, he's had some success, but the team itself has been, you know, they've been losing a ton of games, and, but they're trying to combat that by literally combating. And there was that game in LA, there were there four or five fights. And
right. Well, at the same time, I would say that, I mean, they were much more effective playing that. All right, you're going to try to go after us. We'll take the power play and score on you.
Yeah. And they don't have that power
play this year, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the power play is the best.
Yeah.
Is the best.
Make them pay by scoring a goal on them.
Yeah. But, it's also one of the things that when Boston were taking all their liberties,
right,
that was also when they had a dominant penalty
kill,
so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's ways, I guess, you want your team to play. I don't particularly like what Tortorella is doing with the Canucks here.
No.
But it's not like he really has a choice. It's not a team, you know, that's not a team full of skill guys anymore.
Well, yeah, I also do. I tweeted this and, you know, it received some pushback from overly optimistic Canucks fans.
Yeah.
With their blinders on, but I mean, it did reek to me a bit of, you know, the past week as a whole, like the thing that happened against the Kings and then the Ducks game and now this one, like, mm-hmm, it does kind of reek of a team that just kind of is looking at itself in the mirror and realizing that,
yeah,
it's not,
yeah,
that good anymore. Like, it's a good team, but
yeah,
I mean,
but you know, that's a shootout loss on home ice to Calgary, and
a win, shootout win.
Oh yeah, my bad. They're all losses.
Yeah. It took like six or seven rounds.
So anyway, we've hit on that enough, and I'm sure all the...
We didn't really reach a conclusion. But
all the mainstream radio guys have also done it too. And
you think people are talking about this storyline?
Maybe. Right. I don't know. I don't listen to the radio.
Well, what else do you think we should touch on?
From Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's just run down what else happened. Jamie Benn takes a flying elbow at Matt Cook.
Oh, that was so stupid.
But here's the worst part, is for those of us who have Jamie Benn in fantasy.
That's the worst part of it?
It was uncalled, no penalty on the play. Has he been hit with a suspension or a hearing announcement at all?
I don't think so. The dumbest part is like people that are like, oh, well, it's Matt Cook. He deserves it. Like, what? Yeah, no one deserves that.
It's part of the reason I'm trying to log off Twitter, just to so I don't have to see that people think that way.
Like, no one deserves to get elbowed in the head like that. Like,
no, not even Matt Cook.
I know, it's stupid.
Okay. What else on Saturday?
Are we gonna touch on Marty St. Louis' four goals?
Marty St. Louis scored four goals.
Didn't even stroke it.
Yeah.
Rooster watch. What's up with that? Joe Thornton was in the house.
Yeah. Joe Pavelski with three goals. Did anybody ask Joe Thornton about the four goal game?
I don't know. I didn't see any.
Yeah. Because San Jose was in Vancouver when Ty Sagan scored his four goals.
Yeah.
And we started joking about, was anyone going to ask Thornton about Sagan's four goal game?
Yeah.
Thornton had made his comments on the team's previous
trip to San Jose. Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny. You know, you look at Martin St. Louis' stats. I was pulling up numbers of players that, you know, that have been playing at an elite point of game level for a good number of games.
Right.
And there's only four names there. Claude Giroux and Martin St. Louis are two of them. Of the four, and they're both off Canada's Olympic team.
Man,
getting into that again.
I love Martin St. Louis so much. He's so awesome.
Tampa Bay's, the rest of the Lightning are incredibly fun to watch.
I've joked about this a few times, but I'm kind of serious. I kind of just want to pack up, move to Tampa Bay, and just cover the Lightning for the next 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you know, how much longer do you... And they're gonna have, you know, they have all this sustained success coming because they're doing all this without Stamkos in the lineup. They're gonna get him back, and even if St. Louis is gone, even when St. Louis retires in 5 or 6 years, whenever that is, here's making a push for the 2016 Team Canada,
right?
Or what year are we? 2018.
Well, just imagine what's gonna happen with the Lightning when Marty St. Louis finally hits his prime.
Yeah, I know, but they have so many good young guys coming back from the system. I'm so surprised at how young Andre Palat is.
Yeah.
He was only drafted. He was drafted in the seventh round of
2011. He had three points last night.
Yeah. So Andre Palat, Alex Killorn, Tyler Johnson. I picked up Johnson in my fantasy league.
Kucherov.
Nikita Kucherov.
Namesnikov, who's killing it in the AHL.
And they just keep, you know, they keep having this pipeline of guys coming up.
Right.
Namesnikov, is he killing with points? Because his... When I watched him with London, it was his defensive game that really impressed me. He has a chance of being a two-way guy that fits on that team. There,
he has 12 goals in 24 games.
Okay,
he's over a point a game.
Yeah, that's in the AHL. That's very impressive.
He's been doing good. Yeah, especially this is his first like real run through. Last year, he got a sample of it.
So I have no idea how much behind the scouting Steve Yzerman is. Or whether he put new guys in place or what their focus became. But they've hit on everybody lately. And they're not just producing NHL players. They're producing top-flight NHL players.
Right.
And guys without a whole lot of pedigree going into the draft. You know, how big was... You know, Andre Palat's name wasn't even on radars.
No.
And he gets developed into a guy who's an NHL second-liner now.
We haven't even mentioned Dick Panic.
Oh, yeah. Ricard Panic.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about them is, I mean, they still haven't gotten anything out of Brent Conley.
Yeah.
Who everyone had high expectations
and Dana
for.
And Terrell too.
Slater Cuckoo, who they took in the first round a few years ago. Is that his name?
No, it's Cuckoo.
Cuckoo?
Yeah, that's how you pronounce
it. Like Cuckoo Cafe.
Yeah.
Right downstairs. Who would you? I didn't prepare you for this, but. Just off the top of your head, if you could pick one situation to jump in on as like a general manager, would you pick Colorado or Tampa Bay to take over right now?
I'd probably take over to Colorado because I'd just be so scared of screwing up anything in Tampa Bay right now.
Right.
I think Colorado has the... they have the higher ceiling.
Instead
guys.
Of being the GM, let's say, which team would you buy stock on?
Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
I'd buy a stake in that. I think that they, you know, the way that their success is a lot more sustainable than what Colorado has. Colorado has their top end, you know,
Colorado
high ceiling
better
guy.
Top end guys.
Yeah, they have the higher ceiling, but I don't think that their system is full as much depth.
Yeah,
and you know. I'm sure, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, I think his possession game has come around a lot.
Right.
It's to be expected. It's tough for guys that young.
I saw, I don't know, you probably know this better than I, but I saw a stat of like, if he went back to Halifax right now, he'd be younger than like half the team or something like that. Like, it's kind of, got to keep into perspective, like what he's doing at such a young age.
Yeah.
I mean.
So yeah, he was 17 when he first went to training camp. Yeah. And
it's crazy.
So his offense is coming around. His defense is going to be there. And, you know, first overall picks tend to struggle in their first couple seasons. Yeah. And then, you know.
Well, I mean, he got thrust into it. Right now he's playing with Landeskog and Stasny, which is a pretty sweet situation to jump into. But
they're stacked with a lot of forwards. I like that call. And I was sort of hipster on Colorado. I put a column up on Back End Shelf
in
2012 saying, I think Colorado has better young forwards than the Oilers.
Right.
And it got some pushback, but...
Yeah, well, no,
I think...
Well, the thing that I like about Tampa Bay, they're really close for me. The deciding factor in me might be... I mean, they have better depth, as we mentioned, but I also like what they're doing on D a lot more than Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
I like Colorado's Andre Benoit is in their top four.
Benoit balls.
Someone named Nick Holden.
Yeah. They have their top pairing this year has been excellent.
Yeah, Haida and Johnson.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like Tampa Bay, you know, Matt Carl's probably overpaid, but still a good NHL defenseman.
And I think Tampa Bay has some really good names on their back end, and it was just surprising when it took them until this year to really put it together.
Yeah.
And
Hedman is a monster. He just needs to stay healthy. He's always injured.
Yeah, he didn't come back against San Jose.
No,
so
he's always injured.
Yeah.
That's the problem. But he's so good when he plays.
Yeah. He's an absolute... He's a possession beast. But, you know, they're going to go back to the well and find somebody.
Then they have maybe my favorite player in the NHL, Radko Gudas.
Radko Gudas. It was...
The beard.
Great. He's also a great fantasy performer.
I know. Oh, if you play in a hits league.
Yeah. Extrapolating rate stats is what you want to do with Radko Gudas.
Oh, my goodness.
And okay, sorry, in our draft, I had to pick between, I really had to pick between, I had one sort of mid-range money guy left.
Right.
So it was going to be either Gudas or Brendan Dillon. And I went up going with Brendan Dillon. I thought he would be more useful.
Right.
And he stopped taking minor penalties.
Well, yeah, because he kind of realized that he needed to play a bigger role in that team. And kudos to him for bringing his penalty rate down. But
as for you know, good undrafted success stories.
Right.
Everyone in Vancouver talks about Chris Tanev, but Brendan Dillon is.
Yeah.
Right in your backyard, Mike Gillis, and you didn't even find him.
Have you heard of what Brendan Gallagher has been doing in Montreal?
Oh, who?
Milan Lucic. Have you heard of these guys?
Yeah. Lance Boma. Spencer Mahacek. Craig Cunningham. I think he played a game this year.
Oh, man.
Just for those of you who don't live in Vancouver, there are a lot of people that are angry that the Vancouver Canucks do not draft Vancouver Giants more often.
Yeah.
Despite only two of them being available, both of them who are in the NHL.
Yeah.
And one of them, they'd have had to take Milan Lucic in the first round when he was ranked, 50th.
I know, it's crazy.
Boston took a reach on him in the second.
Let's transition into a segment we're going to be trying out towards the latter half of these podcasts.
Okay.
And it's going to be some fantasy hockey talk.
Okay.
We kind of realized that there, no offense to anyone doing it out there, but there isn't that much kind of informed, smart fantasy talk going around. So we're going to try out the segment where we kind of advise you guys on certain players you should either try and target as buy lows, guys that are overperforming on your team that you should try and sell high on.
Well, here we go. Like this, I made a trade recently, a couple of weeks ago, for a guy named Rick Nash,
right,
who was shooting a career low shooting percentage. Mm-hmm. He had just 8 goals. He was getting a ton of heat in the New York media and among fans.
Yep.
And when you see that, the conclusion shouldn't be, oh, Nash can't play. The conclusion should be, it's more than likely that he's going to come around. And I think, since I made it, he has 3 goals in his last 2 games. He had 4 more in a previous week. Those are the kind of, those are the players you want to be trading for, not the ones who have had the hot weeks. You want the ones who have had the real long, cold stretches. Yep. So, Dmitry and I kick around good deals we made. Who did you trade for Clark MacArthur?
Oh, I traded Slava Voynov a week into the season, and I remember I was telling some informed people, people that know fantasy hockey.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to try and make this trade for Clark MacArthur, and they were like, why? He kind of Toronto didn't want him. Like, what's the big deal? He's not even playing with Jason Spezza. He's playing on their second line.
Kyle Turris.
Oh, my God. Why would you want that? I'm like, no. Yeah. It's going to... Because I remember in the first week, they controlled 65% of all shot attempts. They were just killing, but he didn't have any points to show for it.
It took him a while to get a goal, too.
Yeah, and then I was like, I think I'll buy low on this guy, and now he's a top 10 left winger on fantasy.
A guy I might take a look at if my league doesn't allow waivers, but would be Nick Kulibin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying this because I'm a Toronto homer. I'm saying this because he's moved up to a line with Nazem Kadri and Joffrey Lupul.
Yep.
And right now, Kadri is pushing back against some local critics. He's had to answer a lot of questions about trade talk. And his performance against Montreal was outstanding. It was I characterize it as a fuck you game to his critics.
Yep.
And so now
are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Sure. Okay. So now Kuhlman's up with Kadri and Lupul because they've done a bit of reshuffling with David Clarkson out. And he has some offensive talent. I think he's shooting 14.3%, which is high. But he's going to get a lot more shots now, I think. He's only a little over 1 per game. He used to be at 2. He's not a 30-goal guy, but I think that if you're in a deep enough league, he might be a guy worth taking a look at for the next couple of weeks until Clarkson's back in the lineup.
Right. I'm going to throw something at you. What do you think about this? What do you think about Dustin Brown as, the ultimate buy low?
Right now?
Yeah. Because here's the problem with Dustin Brown right now. They took him away from Anze Kopitar.
Yeah.
Because I think Dwight King and Jeff Carter are playing there right now. And I'm not sure who, but I would say that I know that it was Williams, Brown, and Jarrett Stoll or something for a while, which obviously isn't conducive to a lot of success.
Yeah.
But Dustin Brown strikes me as kind of just like the ultimate buy low, because I think his owner is so like annoyed with the fact that he has 16 points in 48 games this year. Yeah. But
he's still
over a penalty minute a game. Yeah, he shoots it like nearly three times a game.
Yeah.
He's still playing like 17 minutes, and if he gets back on that line with Kopitar, points will come.
Yeah, I think a lot of people when they look at line combinations going out, they assume it's going to be, you know, for a while. So there's always, you know, when there was some talk that Zach Dalpy was going to stick with the Sittings,
and then he was a healthy scratch.
Yeah, and or you know when Yannick Hansen was, that's the right time to trade them, is when players are put in good situations.
Yeah.
And that's why I wouldn't, you know, that's why Nick Kuhlman isn't a long-term option. It's just for the next couple of weeks until Clarkson's back in the lineup.
Yep.
But, yeah, if LA goes through any more struggling, they're going to obviously shake it up. They have a lot of really good forwards. And they, you know, they too want Dustin Brown to be going. And they're going to be looking, you know, he's a player who's important enough to the franchise that they're going to look to put him in situations specifically to get him going.
Yep.
If the team falters at all.
Yep.
And, you know, his statistic, you know, on-ice shooting, 6.4%, individual shooting percentage, 7.8%, those are both lows. They're on the low end of the spectrum.
Yep.
Of course, you know, his points rate is just so low compared to what it normally is.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think that anyone should have visions of him as anything close to point a game.
No.
Which is a problem that you get into is with expectations, and Brown's a captain for a great team, and you expect him to score a lot more than you do, but his career high in points is 60.
No, yeah. Well, he's like a peripherals guy. If you play in a league with like hits and penalty minutes and shots, and he's good for that.
And but my league is just goals and assists. And
right.
He might be like, that's a guy I could buy low on.
Yeah, you could get him for probably like nothing.
Yeah. I just have no one left to trade anymore because I have such a good lineup and I want to keep them all together. Right. I don't want to mess with team chemistry. Are we going to do games of the week?
Let's do it. By the way, just a fun fact that I want to throw out to you.
Okay.
I just searched this up. Marty St. Louis, because I was just kind of wondering like how, you know, whether he's being lucky, because he has 50 points in 50 games right now. And I was kind of just wondering like how sustainable is this? And his on-ice shooting percentage is actually nearly 2% lower than it was last year.
Yeah.
And the year before. He's shooting, like, his own personal shooting percentage is kind of elevated. He's shooting 18%, which will probably come down a bit. But, I mean, for his career, he's, like, a 14% guy. So, it's not, you know, I think if your owner is, there might be, a Marty St. Louis owner out there who thinks, like, this guy's old and I'm trying to sell high on him. But I kind of think
he's legit. I don't think anyone would be doing that.
I think
selling high because he's old.
What if you were in a keeper league?
Okay. So, you know, and well, who do you think got a good World Junior bump if you have some prospects going? Rasmus Ristolainen? Yeah. Anyone who watched that Sweden-Finland game?
Anthony Mantha?
Oh, that's a good one. one of the things with Mantha is he's dominating the Quebec League, but his birthday is September 16, so he was taken a full year after everybody. So he's older than most players in junior hockey right now, and that's helping him out a lot. And Mantha's, I don't know what to think about him, but he just dominates the Quebec League, and he's so much fun to watch with Drouin and Hudon against in the Super Series against the Russians. Those were Marty St. Louis, though, 2.7 shots per game. That's incredible for that age.
Anthony Mantha is like 350 days older than Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Okay, so games of the week?
Games of the week, let's do it.
All right. Last week I picked Ottawa-Montreal just because I like the way those two teams play hockey against each other, and that ended up being close to a classic with controversy that
followed. So little class. Oh, my God. By the way, I'm really glad we didn't spend any time talking about PK Subban on this podcast. Let's keep it that way.
I only just saw what Richard Sherman said after that. He called the receiver he was covering at the end of the game mediocre.
And yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Game of the week tomorrow, 4 p.m. Pacific time, Florida, Buffalo.
Ooh, with Tim Thomas starting, right?
Tim Thomas is starting in net.
His mystery flu is going to be over.
No, it's great. Yeah. If you guys missed it, because Florida's playing against Pittsburgh today, and Tim Thomas was initially slated to start, and then he came down with a mystery flu. Mm-hmm. But apparently he's going to be good to go for tomorrow, which is something I would do if I was an impending UFA. Yeah.
Something that they did on Backhand Shelf podcast back when they had a bunch of people on it is if they'd have a bet and the loser would have to watch a game of the other person's choosing. Right. We should start doing something like that. We'll talk later. Anyway, but the game I'm looking forward to this week is Chicago and Detroit.
Right.
Playoff series last year, an excellent seven-gamer.
Right.
Former division rivals, now in separate conferences. The first of two meetings this year. Detroit, desperate need of wins at home to Chicago. I think that's...
Yeah, those games are usually pretty fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking right now. Oh, man.
It's pretty...
It's not a great week.
Yeah, honestly. It's not a, there's going to be some good games, obviously. Like Pittsburgh-New York could be fun.
Pittsburgh Islanders on Thursday. It's going to be on TSN2. That'll probably be like a 5-4 game or something, especially if Kevin Poulin is involved in any way. I don't know. Other than that, I mean, it's a pretty dry week in terms of intriguing matchups.
Well, you were watching the rematch of Islanders-Philly.
Yeah.
Their game on Saturday was actually excellent. I'm not sure if you watched
it. It was. Islanders came back today. Kyle Pozo, who no one really talked about as a Team USA snub, who's a point of game this year.
It was pretty big.
I didn't really see it that much. He scored a power play goal to send it to overtime. They won in a shootout. Anders Nielsen in that. Fun fact.
That's very fun. That is so much fun. And then Los Angeles is playing Anaheim.
Anaheim on Saturday night. Yeah.
That's on NHL Network in the U.S. And the rest of you would need Center Ice, Game Center. Yep. Game Center Live is my preferred.
That's about it. Next week, we'll talk about this off the air, but let's start doing like a picks thing, and then the loser has to do like a write-up or something on a game.
Yeah.
We'll do something like that. Cam, people can follow you at Cam Chiron on Twitter, even though you're not really doing Twitter these days.
I don't know. I logged on a bunch this week.
Yeah.
I need to stay away.
Yeah, you need to stay away. Yeah. You guys can follow me at Dim Filipovich. You can find this podcast on NHLNumbers.com. We're working on getting it on iTunes. And we'll be back in a few days on Friday.
Yeah.
So, Cam, until then.
Yeah.
Plenty do the listeners time. A flavor. Yeah. Flavor.
A flavor. I was going to drink some tea and honey until then. Hopefully my voice is going a little better.
Until then, I want you to log off.
Okay. Log off, Dimitri. Delete your Twitter, everybody.